welcome, everybody. It's time for another installment of the OC Spotlight, where we look at some of the thought leaders, business leaders, and community leaders shaping our world here in Southern California. Today, we're privileged to have with us kind of a radical thinker in my mind, somebody I've been looking forward to since I read about him in Gizmag Magazine, the online What's Cool Out There, Sir Alfred de Mora. Welcome.
Thank you.
I just want to say, Sir Alfred, that just sounds so cool to me here. You're a Knight of Malta? Is that where you got the Sir nomination here?
Yeah, that's correct. I did.
Do you ever go to Malta? Or?
We're actually planning a trip this summer to go back to Malta again.
So, amazing. Yeah. What is Malta like? I've never even been. Obviously, I've never been to Malta. I know it's just an island in the Mediterranean here, and stood against the Germans in World War II in a famous standoff, and it's about all I know of Malta, and the Knights of Malta.
Well, the coastline there in Malta is just unbelievable. You have to go and see it for yourself. It's something to go see.
Okay. Well, I expect you to send pictures back to us so we can post them up on the internet here.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about what you have done in the past. Give us a quick summary, if that's possible, of your work in the automobile industry here.
Well, that could take about 2 hours, right? 2 days or 3 days. But anyways, I started off, just loving cars when I was a young man. We went from those little HO cars that you drive around the track.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you remember that. Of course, you have to be in our age group, right?
Yes, right.
But
men of a certain age, as they say on television, right?
Exactly. So, and I just fall in love with cars. You know, I think that you're passionate about cars. You have a love for cars, and you just continue on. I just decided that's what I was going to do, and proceeded to go out to California, in Santa Barbara, California, and got involved with a company called Clenay Coachworks. And eventually ended up taking Clenay over after they went into a bankruptcy.
And let's stop right there. And for those of you who have listened to these spotlights before, you know periodically I tell you about my background. I grew up as a kid in Detroit. My father was an executive at Chrysler Corporation. Everybody in my block, everybody in my high school, their dad worked for a car company or they worked for one of the suppliers. I mean, it was really a company town. I'm talking about the 60s and 70s here, way back when Detroit was still the powerhouse of America here. And the big three really were the big three. And I remember my father, who was at one time in charge of the import program and customer survey, did all sorts of different jobs through the years. He thought the Clenay was the coolest thing, and so many other car executives did, and they were so rooting for the success of the Clenay, which seemed counterintuitive to me. You'd think they'd want to sort of stop any competition from sprouting up. What was your experience? Did you feel love or hatred or curiosity? What did you feel when doing the Clenay back then?
No, you know, everybody loved the Clenay. We didn't have any negative towards the Clenay at all, because we did fit what even still today they say is a niche market.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, Rolls-Royce is in a niche market. Porsche is in a niche market. Everybody's in a niche market
these days, right?
But, no, and, you know, the movie stars came to us, and the singers came to us, from Julio Iglesias to Wayne Newton. You named it, Rod Stewart. They were all there. And then, of course, we were on Dynasty in Dallas. And,
yes, all those shows, right?
Yeah, so, you know.
You were the lifestyle, the rich and famous. And for those of you who are too young to remember Clenay, go look it up. Go Google it. It was a very cool classic. It looked like it was out of the 1920s or something like that to me. A classic. What were these to have names for these coaches? Cabriolet or something, or I don't know. I don't know enough about the style to say what it is. Well, how would you describe the Clenay?
Well, I mean, it's a retro car. It's a 30 style retro car, and the nice thing about it was you had that old style. I mean, even today when people come to me and they say, "What year is that Clenay?"
Yes,
and in fact, it's 35 years old, and we're still in production, going back into production with it, and so it's like 35 years, 45 years, 100 years from now, it's still going to be the same.
Well, my father was very close with, I think his name was C.R. Anderson or whatever, something like that, who left Chrysler and was working with DeLorean, the famous GM, Renegade GM executive who broke off and did the DeLorean car, go see Back to the Future and all those kind of press that they had there. And that whole thing just blew up and turned into a mess. They tried to build the car in Ireland and all sorts of things. And I remember my father, another saying, shaking his head, saying, "Nobody will ever start an independent car company. It's just too difficult, too expensive. There's too tight a lock on the market share. What's your take on that? Because you've been the renegade and fought that.
Yeah, I've been here for 37 years, believe it or not. I'm the longest lasting independent car company out there. And, you know, we've gone through tidal waves and hurricanes and still come out on top as far as I'm concerned. And what I mean by that is my company today has no debt. And I have no partners. That's a pretty credible statement today if you go to Detroit and see the financial statements. And,
yeah, right. Government motors, right? Yeah. They can't even survive on their own anymore here. Well, it seems like something has changed. I mean, certainly there was the demise of the big three and the invasion of the Japanese and Germans and now Koreans and others, and the Chinese may be coming and others. So it seems like the marketplace has opened up. And for the first time, we've seen what seems to be a successful car launch of something radically different. And I'm thinking of the Tesla. Of course, we were hoping that the Fisker was going to make it here in Orange County, but that didn't seem to make it out. What's your take on this electric car market here? We've talked about this a little bit offline. What's your opinion? Is this a viable niche? Are these viable companies, viable products?
Yeah, I think that they're all viable companies, and I still think that there's a lot of engineering that needs to go into it and technology. For most people can't, you know, afford to spend $80,000 to $100,000 to go 265 miles on a charge.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, ultimately, you know, the goal is to stop the global warming, and you have a lot of people supporting it. I think they did about 17,000 cars last year. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was Tesla. And so I think they're doing a really, really good job. I think the car design, they got it this time. Mm-hmm. Compared to their first car. This car is, I think, a very exciting car.
And it is. It's a beautiful car. It's it's a head-turning car.
It is. And I thought the designers did a great job. You know, like all things, they're plowing forward, so they have actually plowed the way for a lot of people to come into the industry and say, this is a viable thing eventually. You know, it's going to come down in price and everybody will be able to have electric cars. Now, the end result of that is, I'm not sure. What do you do with the batteries and the charging? So there are still some negative things to that I'm hoping everybody gets resolved. And technology, if enough people are moved in that direction, then they'll solve those problems like we try to do.
What is the problem with batteries? That seems to be the one thing holding this whole movement towards electric everything. The batteries just seem to be pretty much the same batteries we've had since Henry Ford came along. I mean, I guess they've gotten better in their lithium and their other things, but it seems like it's just still the same technology and it won't hold a charge that long.
You know, that's correct. And on my website, we have a lot of people where it says, if you're working in a car garage and you have a great idea, come see me. I'm the guy to come see. So
right.
I've been able to capture an awful lot of people that have sent me new stuff on batteries and all kinds of things. But the battery technology, I see a future of change in the next 5 years, especially on the stuff that I've seen. Mm-hmm. But I really can't really talk about at the moment. It is very exciting for what's about to come about, I believe, in the next 5 years.
So you think we will break that barrier and be able to hold a charge for weeks, days, whatever, and not have it evaporate after a couple of hundred miles here?
Yeah, I think the key there is how to keep the batteries charged on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that technology is right around the corner. You know?
Well, they were talking about, you know, transferring, using some of the braking technology. When you're braking, they're going to use that to recharge the batteries. And they've talked about other sorts of things. But
well, you have regenerative braking today. You have all these things that add to the factor of helping get where Tesla's at today.
Mm-hmm.
Although when you have that many batteries in there and you've got that much weight to a car and potentially, you know, a fire hazard issue, you have to be very cautious.
They certainly had those issues and those complaints. This really is a technologically different platform. Is it outdated every 3 to 5 years? And what do you do then with yesterday's technology? Do you just fill up the landfills with all these batteries? Do you somehow recycle them, reuse them, or are they just... are they boat weights, boat anchors here?
Yeah, that's always been my argument. They're going to have to be recyclable somehow. It just depends on, you know, there's going to be an awful lot of insurge of batteries, a tremendous amount. And those batteries, they don't last forever. They're, to my knowledge, they're good between 4 and 5 years max.
And why did GM pull out of the whole program only to come back here? You know, there certainly was that thing that Michael Moore, I think, made where he claims it was all some conspiracy or something just to kill the electric car, or they just didn't see the future in it. But I don't know. It seems like the big three, well, I don't know if they're even the big three, but the three main American automakers, GM, Chrysler, and Ford, have all experimented with it, have all played with it, have all talked about it. In one way or another, they're all trying to do something with it, but they still don't seem to be behind it here.
Well, I think you have to understand, you got those three that you just described to me, they're big machines.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that, it's hard to change innovation on a big machine right away. So you literally have to start with a brand new piece of paper, and they just haven't been able to do that yet. They are trying. They're revamping themselves.
And I wonder, there was a great book whose title eludes me now here quite a number of years ago, and they basically talked about transformative technologies. And they go back to the fact that there was somebody around doing that, but they laughed at the new idea. Why did the ice makers not embrace George Westinghouse's idea of refrigeration or buy him out? Why did the railroads scoff at the airlines? Why didn't they buy him out? Why didn't the horse and buggy manufacturers get into the horseless carriage business? What is it about them that they're so afraid of these new technologies?
Well, first of all, it costs a lot of money to get new technologies going, and you really have to think outside the box.
Right.
And a lot of the companies have not been able to do that yet, but they are doing it. I mean, they're coming to California, which California is like the leader of trend of everything.
It is. Everything is possible out here. I think that's the different feeling. When I grew up in Detroit, we were talking about this offline, there was a feeling of if you wanted to do something outside the norm, people immediately would say why, and then they'd say they'd have 20 reasons why it won't work, as opposed to when you come out here and you say, hey, I'm going to the moon tomorrow, and people say, great, can I ride along? You know, there isn't that immediate skepticism or negativity about things, and I think that's what's changed. Now, the car businesses seems to have recognized that. Talk about design studios. I mean, I don't think the majority of Southern Californians realize that Detroit is no longer where all the design studios are. They're all here in Southern California.
Yeah, they're from Thousand Oaks all the way down
Carlsbad,
as far as Carlsbad, even Atascadero. So there is a whole bunch of them. Of course, you've got the Art Center, which everybody pulls from here, the Pasadena Art Center, which is mm-hmm. a great school. The whole thing is a very interesting, you know, bubble happening here. And, of mm-hmm. course, it reflects back to Detroit, which is really good because now we're finally starting to see really nice designs. But in my mind, we're still seeing kind of the same looking cars, so they really haven't stepped out of the box entirely yet.
Well, you set it up perfectly because you have stepped out of the box. You have created one of the nicest looking cars I've ever seen in my life. Let's talk about the real reason for your appearance here, not just to reminisce about the car business and the Clinet, but your latest project here. Let's talk about that.
The VG 6.2, we have a convertible and we'll soon come out with a coupe. That car, you know, is back into our neoclassic division,
mm-hmm.
and because we have several divisions. In fact, we even manufacture motorcycles, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
But this is back to our neoclassics, our roots, which we had started from, and I always wanted to build this car that I just thought was really cool and so different. So the difference between this Vici is that you can go down the road at your 200 miles an hour but not have that bill of what I call the Ferrari roll syndrome, the exotic car syndrome. You take it in, you get an oil change, it costs you $3,000.
The sticker shock of that, yeah.
This particular car is to go out there and just, you know, go out and have fun with the car and have the horsepower. I would challenge any Corvette to a race with this car.
Wow.
Our biggest motor in this is 558 horsepower with a 6-speed, so you can get into a manual and or an automatic. The cool thing is you got this 30 retro look, and again, you can't tell if I built this car today or 30
like
years ago.
It looks like a car, like something I would see. What was the one, Delahaye. Delahaye, yeah. That just really was a beautiful, exotic French-built car. It kind of has some of that, or some of the classic British motor car going around the little hamlets of England here and winding around there were a number of car manufacturers like that too. So
yeah, this particular car we built from the ground up. It's really interesting because a lot of people say, "Oh, he uses this door and uses this and uses that." We don't. We actually build this car from the ground up, and then of course we added the little twist to this by putting the art onto the car, which has never been done before.
Never been done. Let's talk about that. Where did you get this artist? Why put art on a car? This is now trying to turn a transportation into art. That's why I mentioned that. I'm sorry, botching the name, but Delahoy, is that it?
Delahaye,
that yes. was a car that has been considered to be art. There were examples like that in the 20s and 30s or whatever. Certainly the Cords and the Auburns and some of those had that kind of still thought of as art pieces as much
as
they were.
No question out there, and you can tell by the prices of those cars too.
Yes,
you know, so
right.
they've shot up tremendously. But
so why do you take a retro car and then you put art on top of it?
Well, this art was kind of unique. I went and my market today, the U.S. has dried up considerably, but it's still here. But mainly we're in Asia and mm-hmm. UAE and overseas. And so I decided to pick an artist which I thought was...
The UAE, the United Arab Emirates, right?
Yes,
Dubai
yeah.
and all those places,
sure,
right?
Sure, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Brunei, all through
right.
those areas over there. And everybody has, you know, we stand out alone. And I've always said, you know, that's a really nice piece of art, just like you said earlier. You know, mm-hmm. that car's a piece of art and this is a great thing. And, you know, and so I decided, why not really make the first true rolling art, which has never been done before.
Never. I would never even think of. You've got to go look at. Let's give everybody the website. We're going to give this out a couple times here because we're going to want to refer to this photo a couple times. What's the website to see this car?
It's www.dimoramotorcar.com. So that's DIMORAMOTORCAR.com.
Okay, and the car is called the
Vici, V-I-C-C-I 6.2.
What's Vici stand for?
That's an interesting thing. I name all my cars after women. And so you know, we would always say, you know, she's a beautiful car, and this is a beautiful car, and I've heard it thousands of times. And so the first car that we did and under the Dimora line was the Natalia. That was my mother's name. So, you know, being a good Italian boy,
Got to start with mama here, right?
So the Vici,
and that's a spectacular car by itself. That has much more of the classic, I don't know, high-end Bentley kind of look to me or something.
Yeah, that's a whole entirely different project, and it's completely different than this car. And
it reminds
me
of the Maybach kind of or something like that.
I try to touch, you know, a whole different market with that, and we can get into that, but I'm mm-hmm. going to finish.
Yeah, let's finish. I'm sorry. That. I'm wandering here, but yeah.
But yeah, that's all right. The Vici, as I said, that, you know, I named it after women, and then it also has a double meaning, which means to conquer.
Veni, vidi, vici, right?
Exactly.
I came, I saw, I conquered, right?
Exactly. So, you know, that was an afterthought, by the way. That wasn't on purpose. But, you know, how some things just kind of fall in place. And this whole car fell in place. And then, of course, we debuted this car at an art show in Taiwan about 2 weeks ago.
Yes, right.
And
that's how we came upon this. I saw this in, I read a thing called Gizmag. It's online. They talk about cutting-edge cool stuff. And here is this cool car, and it's right in our backyard, being made in Palm Springs, not being made in Taiwan or whatever, and they were just premiering. I thought, let's jump on this and get the story about this, because this is exciting stuff here.
Well, I'll tell you, the show for us was exciting. It was the first time, and it was a gamble. You know, we went out there, and I said, you know, no one's ever done this before, and then, you know, it's kind of like rolling dice. So is this going to be good or bad? Knock on wood, it was fantastic. We had such a great reception over there, and anybody can see if they Google it. You know, Dimora in Taiwan, we were everywhere. Every mm-hmm. newspaper, everywhere. We've traveled through China now. We actually sold two cars at that show.
And these cars aren't cheap, folks. This isn't something you're going to go down and pick up this weekend here at your local car deal. What did these run? A couple $1 million?
This was the Vici with the paintings are $1 million.
Wow.
And Master Lee, Lee Sun Dun, is the one that I decided to pick, and he has seven galleries around the world, but more importantly, his abstract and his paintings were fantastic, and so I thought it would look really cool on the car.
Mm-hmm. Very fluid, very flowing. These aren't just static pictures of pastures or something here. These aren't old art. I mean, it somehow feels like somebody sort of just, I don't know how to describe this, they sort of spray-painted this car in a very flowing fashion here, and it seems to...
Yeah.
Suggest speed and motion and all that.
Well, it was a challenge putting Master Lee's painting onto our car because he actually did the painting itself. And,
oh, wow.
And by the way, you do get the painting with the car. So that's an interesting thing that's never been done before either. So we call it the Treasure Series, and we're only going to build 25 of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of them is different. So each paint job is completely different.
Ah, so it's good. I'm going to have and can I commission my own artwork, or can I say I want to, I don't know, Manet on here or something, or is this?
No, Master Lee has he has his own trend of paintings under the Treasure Series.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the ones that we're doing, and which I'm really excited about. And that hood, by the way, took 50 different colors to get to that hood, along with the 24-karat gold leaf that's in that hood.
Wow.
So, and on our firewall, I might add, is 24-karat gold.
Who's going to drive this car? You don't want to chip this. You don't want to get a bug on it here. I mean, this is going to be, is this become so beautiful that it can't be touched?
I hope not. I plan on driving mine around, and I will drive mine around. And from what I can tell from the two buyers, at least one of them is definitely going to drive this car on a daily basis.
Wow.
I might add.
So what's under the hood? Give us all the space. Outside, you've got this classic sort of, is it a two-seater? It looks like a two-seater.
It is a two-seater.
All right, so you've got this two-seater kind of open, convertible kind of 20 sort of touring car or something.
Exactly. It's a two-seater Sportster touring car with a 430-horsepower General Motors running gear to it with a six-speed automatic or four-speed, or, again, you can have a six-speed manual, too. The idea behind that was, again, was serviceability. You can get it serviced at any GM dealer or anybody knows how to work on GM cars. So that part of the wallet you're going to be saved on, you know, and it's so reliable. Today we have General Motors puts a 100,000-mile warranty on, you know, basically most of the cars today.
And right.
So we follow that same trend.
And that was one of the fears with any of these unique cars through the years. They've all thought about creating their own transmissions and engines and all. That just seems to be out of reach for any new startup car company here.
Well, I'll tell you, it's not out of reach, and you know, that's where our Natalia comes in. And people keep saying to me, when is that car coming out? And I'm telling them, that car has so much new innovation, and we're creating so many new technologies with it. It takes a good 7 to 10 years to come out. I was hoping to get it out in 5 to 6 years, but in 2017 is our year.
Wow.
So, and that has a 16-cylinder in it, which is our own 16 with our own transmission in that thing.
So you're actually going to take the block and bore it out and do all this and create your own engine.
Yep. We started from ground zero on this car on every aspect of it. And it was pretty cool because we invited like Clemson University to get involved with us with their students. And it seemed like a lot of their teachers jumped right in. So we have, it's pretty cool because a lot of people added to the car and we looked at it and said, you know, this is a good new idea. So let's further that a little bit.
And what makes you want to take on that challenge? Because that seems like it's daunting enough to build a $1 million car with art on it and find a market for that. But now you want to go and actually redesign engines, transmissions, and all this stuff from start to finish. Why do that, and what do you think you can do different?
Our company is really considered to be a technology company, and those technologies that we're creating we hope to pass on and license out there. And, you know, it's all the way down to our new material that we're using called Eluroc.
Eluroc. Okay.
Eluroc.
All right.
Yeah. And Eluroc is like a aluminum type of base with a rock, lava rock backing to it. And it's as light as carbon fiber, and it's pretty trick. And we're starting to use that on the cars, and you know, over time, you have to really experiment with this stuff and make sure it's going to hold it all up. But any future of any car, in my opinion, is that you have to take the weight out of the car.
Clearly. Clearly.
And that's where we've been struggling and heading towards, is taking that weight out of the car. If you take the weight out of the car, you're going to get better gas miles right off the bat, even if it's a standard car that you see today. And, of course, your rubber on your tires is going to go farther, your ball joints, everything.
Everything.
You know,
right.
Tie
taking,
rods.
Taking less stress and less wear and tear on everything here.
So if we can take the weight out of the cars, then we're going to have a better car. And, you know, I foresee down the future that, you know, these cars, and you've seen it in the past, but I like to see resins that actually can pop back out. Your fender can actually pop back out.
And, oh, wow. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
And we're close to that. We are so close to getting that. And so that Natalia is going to be very, very special. And it's, you know, not cheap. We originally were coming out at $2 million, and now it's at $2.6 million.
Wow. But that's going to run into all sorts of technical challenges. I mean, you're trying to redesign things. You've got to get certifications. You've got to try this out for a certain number of miles and see if your ideas work and all that.
Exactly. And that's where, you know, people are a little bit impatient. They don't realize that there's about 8,000 pieces to a car. Oh, and you're redesigning all those parts. So, you know, and then, of course, when you come out, bam, you know, you're like a hero. But the nice thing is that we have so many different innovations in there and so many companies that we call technology partners. And in effect, they're sponsors with us. And they want to grow with us and they want to learn with us. And they want to come in and say, hey, this guy's willing to try. And if he fails at it, he'll go at it again until he gets it and then come out with it. And we've proven that.
Well, we're going to take a quick break for our technology partners, which we call sponsors and advertisers here. And we'll be right back with some more about the only independent, innovative car company in the world, really, I think of, but certainly the only one I know of here in the United States, and it's right here in our backyard in Palm Springs. So we'll be right back after these words from our sponsor.
Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy three with triple points on airfare. Buy two with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, we're back with the OC Spotlight, talking to somebody that probably deserves three or four spotlights here, Sir Alfred DeMora, who started with the Clinet many years ago. For all of you car buffs like me, you're going to remember the Clinet as a classic, beautiful, independent car that bucked the trend and proved that you could create a car here in America other than the big three production cars. Something that we haven't seen successful. We saw certainly the DeLorean and other attempts through the years, but really hasn't been a successful one up until recently with the Tesla here. So we're excited at what he's doing, and we're talking about not only his Vici, did I say that right?
Yep, that's correct.
The Vici, which is a 20s, 30s style two-seater touring car with actually unique commission art. Does each car have a different piece of art on it, or are they all the same piece?
No, each of the 25 are completely different.
Wow, okay. Yeah. So we're talking about $1 million piece of art on a car. Before we get back to talking about your other car here, where we were, the Natalia, the thought occurs to me, because I know you've presented at an art museum. Is this something that could be in the Museum of Modern Art? Does it have that kind of potential, or is that the aim, to make this car more than just transportation, but to turn it into a real work of art?
Oh, no question about it. I think, you know, the Guggenheim and what you just described really deserves this in the museum, just to show it off. I know what it did for the art there. They did a 93.2% sell through, which meant 93% of all the artists sold their art. So
wow.
A lot of interest. They never had that kind of activity ever before. So it is a new draw, especially for the museums, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Why not?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to the Natalia. We're talking about a car that's still a couple years away. You're trying to not just incorporate innovative design and artistic expression, but you're trying to really get under the hood, too, and redesign the engine the transmission and all that. And that's where we were left off. This is kind of a continuation of the work you've been doing in technology anyway. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, well, I was the founder of Starbridge Systems, which we created a language called Viva, and we had chips called the Penza. The Penza meant thinking, the chip meant thinking, that's how I coined the name Penza, and then Viva meant life, mm-hmm. and I was quite surprised when I got that from our language, and lost my thought there.
That's okay, that's all right. You got so many things going on, I don't know how you remember all these things. We have to have cue cards, you have to have prompt cards or something. Well, what happened to that company? Did you sell that company?
I sold the company in 2000, but that company was for, the concept was for me to understand the technology so I can further it into cars into a major way.
And you're talking about, I think when we talked before, sort of this idea of linking different computers together and sort of making a mastermind computer.
And that's where the nickname came in with HALS, hyper-rhythm language. It was
that, like the 2001 HAL or something.
Exactly. So the concept behind that was to build a supercomputer, which we did. It plugged into a normal 110, and at that time it was considered to be, you know, you don't plug in a normal 110 into a wall.
No.
You pretty much like the city up Las Vegas, and it's the size of Las Vegas, the computers back then.
Yeah, right.
So we did that in 1997 through 2000, and then, of course, I wanted to get out and bring it back into the car industry mm-hmm. and other industries. And I think it's going to be extremely helpful.
So will this car have a lot of computer-aided stuff in it? Is this going to be filled with chips?
Oh, it's filled with our chips, and it's filled with some really interesting technologies. And redundancy was a real key for us, and that's where the real key comes in for this.
So you don't want one thing to break, and it brings the whole car down here.
Yep. And it's not going to happen with this car.
So you said some interesting technologies. Give us a couple of hints here. Give us some ideas of what you're trying to tackle here.
Well, I mean, just on the radio side of things, when you're downloading music or anything, you know.
Internet radio, podcasts,
yeah,
right?
I mean, we have 4 terabytes of power in the car, which is, you know, unheard of. You don't really need 4 terabytes, you know.
Is that still like a hard drive where you can actually store all this stuff?
It's a solid state. So okay. What I did is to demonstrate this is I...
Big giant flash drive, basically.
Well, right? Yeah. What I did is I got a paint can shaker, and I put the chip in there, and I started shaking the heck out of it. And so, and we had a video or a movie going on, and you can see where it, you know, just didn't affect it whatsoever. So those are the kind of things that we want to do, is we want to build for, you know, for that car to last 300 years, you know, not 10 years.
Is there anything new in the internal combustion engine? I know Mazda tried their rotary engine, which didn't seem to get nobody else seemed to pick up on it. When I was a kid, Chrysler had the turbine car, which caught a lot of attention. They built 50 of them. My father brought one home once, and we all thought this was cool. It would run on perfume or anything else that was combustible. And that technology never went anywhere because I guess they couldn't have it ever run cold. It was basically like running a little jet engine in your car, but it would conk out, or it would burn you if you got behind it. You know?
Yeah, and that's so true, isn't it? And today it's so hard to come out with a new engine, a new format, you mm-hmm. know, let it per se. We are currently working with 2 different companies right now on what I believe could be the next automotive new engines.
Wow, okay.
And
you say this stuff so casually, like, you know, well, we got a new revolutionary engine. And
well, until we actually come out with it and it's been test proven, then, you know, I'm very cautious about it. But I'm actually quite excited about it. I think if you actually seen it and operate and watch this stuff and the thinking through it, it's very exciting. It truly is exciting.
I'm going to tell you a quick story. And again, disclose, I grew up in an affluent area outside of Detroit. Everybody was a car executive. What happened to know one of my friends from high school? His father was, at that time, the president of General Motors, Ed Cole. And he retired and was a real engineering guy, had worked, one of the engineers was part of the patent for the catalytic converter and other things like that. Anyway, so he tried to, in his own way, start a new car company afterwards. And I remember driving back from Ann Arbor. You know, he was not a guy we hung out with too much. He was always off jetting around the world. So he came to pick up Joe and I in Ann Arbor. This is 1976, let's say, and we were in college. And we're driving back, and we're in a little, a little Opel Kadett or something here. And he said, this car is not running on gas. I said, oh, what's it running on? And for the 45 minutes back to suburban Detroit, he's telling me how this car is running on hydrazine, a hydrogen-based fuel now, which is supposed to be super explosive and all these other things. But we're doing it. Now, whatever happened to that car and his ideas, I don't know. He took it to Washington. He did a couple of things. But then he died in a car crash or an airplane crash a couple years later. And I always wonder what happened to that kind of technology. Are there things out there that people are working on like that? Is this, I know we've tried other sort of, I don't know if they use hydrogen, but they use hydrogen fuel cells and other things, sort of things like that. Is there something radically different that we're just not thinking of?
I know of two radically different things that we're involved with that was brought to us and, you know, asked us if we can prove them out and, you know, finish them off. And so we are currently working on those.
Because it seems like if somebody could come through with that kind of basic breakthrough, a battery that lasted longer than anything, I mean, just not just a little bit, but a totally rethought out battery, a different sort of internal combustion engine, a different fuel perhaps, any of those things, the holy grail that people have been talking about for years, it would not just make them very, very rich, but it would radically change transportation in the world, the way we all move ourselves around, in the same way that computers and personal computers changed our life forever when they came out in the 80s here.
Yeah, there's no question. Like the batteries, as you mentioned it, I know of several different batteries that have really high hope. One of them being a paper battery.
And, a paper battery?
Right. So it's 100% biodegradable when you're done with it, which is really cool.
Yeah, right.
And that was by a gentleman out of India that brought that to us. And I just thought that was, you know what, he touched on something that I thought made sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least he was able to get 50% of the equation. What do we do with these batteries?
Afterwards, yeah, because they don't last forever. Right.
So now the other part of the equation is how do we get this battery to last a long time?
Right.
Or at least recharge itself.
Right. Or how do you get an extended range out of it here? Now, of course, everybody, we've got a bunch of black helicopters swooping around the building right now here, photographing us as we speak. I mean, is this really dangerous talk? Is this something that people want to suppress and keep down? You always hear these kind of rumors or ideas. I don't know if I really believe in all that because I think things are so wide open. But is there a concerted effort that would be threatened by these sorts of radical redesigns?
I don't know if they're threatened anymore as they're bought out before they're even out on the market.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not too sure about that. We've changed our thinking. And, you know, one of the things that Detroit lost was what Silicon Valley gained.
Yes.
Right? So that big giant turned into a smaller giant, and Silicon Valley came along and just ate it up. So I think, and that was my concept back in 2000, if we can merge the technology with Detroit, we would become one big monster.
Boy, wouldn't that have been something.
For the U.S. itself.
Well, and people forget, again, I grew up in Detroit. Detroit in the 1920s and into the 30s really was Silicon Valley. This is where Henry Ford invented the assembly line. This is where there were hundreds of car manufacturers. It was wide open. Everybody was trying to figure out the future of transportation.
Oh, no question about it. And what was so funny, when I went back to Detroit and I said to him, you know, technology is going to go into cars. Computers are going to be cars. And there's a bigger market for computers in cars than there is at your home.
Yes.
And they kind of looked at me and said, we don't get that.
Where would we put it? What does it do? Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, Sync came along and, you know, some things started coming a little by little. And as, you know, 10 years later, we're starting to see some radical changes. And soon your car is going to be a computer.
Well, I'll look at it just from our little standpoint here. We do, obviously, internet radio. We're trying to pioneer something different here, which is live podcasting, if you want to think of it that. I mean, clearly, most people still listen to our shows as podcasts. But we want to do them live. We want to have that ability that you can, through a computer, through an internet connection, go and listen to these conversations live. And the question I keep seeing in the National Association of Broadcasters is, and in the few car magazines I still subscribe to, is the car companies haven't decided, are we going to just fill it up with speakers and let you provide whatever you want through your smartphone, through a satellite link up, whatever. You can get music from somewhere else, you can get podcasts, you can get recorded audio content and play it yourself. Or are they going to expand the GM OnStar idea, and they're going to provide not just satellite assistance, but they're going to provide satellite programming. What do you think of that?
You know, this year, I think seven different models don't even have CDs in them anymore.
Yeah, right.
So that kind of tells you where the trend's going, right, in my opinion, right? So depending on, it's sort of like Facebook and the rest of them. Who's going to take that position and who's going to go risk the $1 billion to get the thing started, right?
Right?
So it's either beta or, you know.
But it seems like the car company can't decide, do we want to be in the tech, not do we want to be in the entertainment, that's against our core principle? Do we want to create our own iTunes, for example, and have our own catalog of music or our own catalog of programming? Do we want to own Sirius XM and have live broadcasts? Do we want to somehow, as iTunes did, promote podcasts and other sorts of things? And God forbid, do we want to have access to video and these things, and then people are going to crash because they're watching a video. So,
well, not necessarily. You have the backseat drivers, right?
So right.
You can have it in the backseat, and obviously in the. But I think you're 100%, you know, right on. We have to. I mean, we cannot afford not to do this. We have to step into that. Silicon Valley will become, you know, the motor city.
Yes, right.
And, you know, that's why Tesla moved there, obviously,
right,
because they caught on. They get it. Now, being up in Northern California where it's a little bit too expensive, I think that's going to get rearranged a little bit.
But it is a frightening glimpse at what the future could be if Detroit doesn't want to keep losing its position. They see themselves as an engineering, mechanical, you know, bolts and tool and die company, right? That's what an automobile is. And more... that's not the most important component. The most important component is what fuels it. The most important component is how do you distribute and market this thing. And more, it's all these technological things that we demand to be built into these things. We want it to be a giant smartphone. We want it to be a single platform that we can move from our office to our home to our car, and it's all interconnected.
Yeah, the conversions, as I stated back in 2000, is definitely going to happen. And I always thought it was going to, you know, happen within 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And it's definitely happening. And you know that by just going to Detroit. I mean, if you go to Detroit and go down their new assembly lines, it's 90% of it's computers.
Yeah, robotics.
Robotics.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, the universal language, which is so important people forget, is one language. And it's math.
Yeah.
Math is the universal language.
That's an
and that's
interesting
how
idea. Yeah.
We've come up with our computers and everything else. And it's not going to be any different in the cars, except for it's going to be, you know, you're going to pull in your garage, your car is going to fuel itself, it's going to talk to you, it's going to tell you it's got its own problems.
It's going to, right. I foresee the day when your car, somebody comes to your house and says, I'm here to fix your car. And you say, what do you mean? Well, your car called me this morning and says it's having a little trouble here. And so we're out to check it before it turns into something like, oh, go right ahead.
And that technology right now is available.
Right.
You know, it's out there. And so, I mean, it's coming to market. It's just too expensive. And that's why everyone says to me, well, how come your cars are $2 million, $2.6 million?
Yeah, right.
Is because I have to spend so much money on the innovation to get there. And then eventually, hopefully, that'll be licensed, and it'll be, you know, an everyday, let's say, $10,000 to $15,000 car. That would be where I'd like to see it.
Why aren't there more than technology projects like yours in the works? Why aren't there more Teslas out there? Why aren't there more people who are trying to combine the technology that we have available to improve all these devices, mechanical things that we're doing, and at the same time incorporate them into, you know, a beautiful design here and a well-built thing?
Well, it's interesting because you had mentioned before we have Detroit and then we have the technology people.
Yeah.
The technology people, what we consider to be geeks, what they were called out there or whatever you want to call them, and then you have the automotive sector where you have these older guys that don't even get technology. In fact,
they're still using slide rollers, probably.
Yeah, they don't even use email, some of them over there. You know, what is email? So those guys are being forced to use email, have to retire.
Yes, right.
So the convergence between the two of them hasn't happened yet. But people like Google and some of the other companies out there are starting to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they realize that this is going to happen. But you have to really think about it. who really knows technology in cars? And it took me a little while to understand and take time out to go learn technology.
Right.
Right? So that is a big transition. It doesn't seem like it is, but how does one talk to the other? That's the key.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can help be the conduit for that with some of the work that you're doing here.
Well, and that's what we plan on doing. And you know, for the future, you know, over the next 5 years, I think you're going to see DeMora Motor Car grow into something that most people said, boy, I can't believe he's gone that direction.
Well, again, you may just, like you did with the Clinet, you may be just flying under the radar here and everybody's rooting for you, but nobody seems to. The other thing, I guess, that surprises me is I don't hear a lot of talk about what you're doing and what some other people are doing. It seems like we've just got sort of an assumption that a car is a car, and yeah, we can improve it. Maybe we can put Bluetooth into it. But it seems like what you're talking about is radically redesigning what's under the hood, not just what's on top of the car here.
Yeah, no, the whole inners, the whole outer of the car. Well, we hope to go from top to bottom, and we are.
And big computer. Why can't it just be a big computer that that in this case, you know, turns wheels and moves people around?
Well, no question. And I think for safety, you know, it'll be a safer car. It'll be a better car. It'll be a more efficient car. And, you know, as far as efficiency is concerned, we're all worried about global warming. And, you know, let's take, you know, Teslas.
Oh, yeah. Why can't we get 1,000 miles per gallon? Why can't we get 500 miles per gallon or something here, you know?
Well, in my mind.
Why does it have to be a gallon? I don't even know. It could be something else.
Well, if you really think about it, when did electric car really come out? Start with. I mean, it was in the 1900s, and some even arguable was in the late 1800s.
Steam cars. They used to have Stanley steamers. There were other thoughts of how to propel vehicles.
But if you really stop and think about it, how much gas mileage have we actually gained over the last 40 years?
Not much.
I mean, okay.
You go from 15 to 30, or you go from 20 to 40, that doesn't seem like a big leap.
Not for 40 years, especially with the technology has moved in the last 10 years to where we are today.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just the cars are just so far behind. And the good thing is that now we have computers to design cars, so our design changes happen so radically, so fast.
Yes.
And we're able to change things so quick. I mean, in the old days, if you remember, I remember buying a Mercedes-Benz, and that same style was there for 10 years.
They didn't want to change it because they didn't want you to, they wanted it to be able to be resold and it still looked like a new car.
Exactly. So now the new trend is, okay, we're changing the body style virtually almost every year, and that's what computers have brought us.
Yeah, and that's the way cars were when I was a kid. The cars came out every year and they were radically redesigned, and some of that was probably crazy. The door hinges were all different and everything was different, you know, from the ground up. They redid everything here.
Yeah, it's an exciting market, I think, over the next 5 years. And if we have anything to say about it, we plan on being one of the leaders out there and show them that this can be done, you know, for a reasonable cost.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other key.
Well, and the first ones are always, what was the first, I remember, I'm dating myself, God, in the 70s, when you had a Texas Instrument handheld calculator, they were $400, $500, or $600, which was a lot of money for one of those. You know, people couldn't envision that you'd be giving them away for free someday here. But so it takes somebody to break through and to say, all right, the first of anything is expensive, but if you can prove the prototype and then build it out and do it on a mass market, the cost just comes down over and over. But somebody's first got to prove what can be done.
Well, it's known in our cell phones, it's known in our TVs,
yes,
and you know, and all of our equipment. And it's going to be no different here, because once the public says, yeah, I want that, mm-hmm, and see, that's the key. The public has to demand they want it.
Right.
And then everybody, the politicians, are going to follow that.
Yes, exactly.
Because, you know, they're not going to get in office unless they listen to their voters.
Yes. Well, fascinating stuff. I hope you will listen to this spotlight, as I'm sure we'll have Sir Alfred back numerous times over the coming years here to give us updates on what he's doing. We're run out of time here. This is so fascinating, but I want to stick in just a word or two about another wild idea. This one seems very doable to me. I'm not saying the others aren't doable, but you're tackling a big challenge when you want to completely redesign what goes under the hood. I'm talking about your electric jet skis.
Yeah, really excited about the electric jet skis.
It's like such an obvious thing, because you're not trying to make it go 300 miles. You're trying to make it last, 30 minutes or something? What's the average jet time on a jet ski?
At full throttle with us, we're about an hour and 20 minutes.
Okay.
So it's your average on a jet ski is about an hour anyways. And that just sort of made sense to me that, mm-hmm, I could do that. it also made sense if you have a very large boat. Not everybody has a large boat, obviously.
Yeah, right.
But if you go to Monte Carlo, if you go to Newport Beach, you go
big yachts,
yeah. Everybody has jet skis. And one of the big problems is jet skis have fuel. And the fuels are like time bombs underneath the actual ships.
You said that. I never thought. So I've got a $2 million yacht, and I've got a big time bomb sitting in the hold here, filled with gasoline, ready to go off.
Exactly. And so if you don't have that time bomb, your insurance comes down. All of a sudden, you have electric jet skis. You just charge them, and away you go. The boat captain doesn't have to empty them, do all the maintenance work mm-hmm. that has to take place. Virtually take a battery in.
Plus, a lot of these inner harbors don't want one. We've had a number of people on from the Port of Los Angeles and the Port of L.A. They've got a huge initiative on to green ports to make big cargo ships be more energy or less polluting when they're in port. I'm sure that they would love to have the luxury yachts and all these other things in the marinas less running around spitting gas fumes out and putting oil into the water and all the other things that go with having a little gas-powered things running around the harbor here.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is that this is fast, it's quiet, which means that you can put it on a lake that, you know, it's banded.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Mission Viejo or something where they don't allow anything but electric.
Exactly. You know, so in Palm Springs, we have, I don't know how many, you know, natural mm-hmm. or man-made lakes over there that just don't allow you to put one out there.
Exactly.
So this particular one is set for, and it's expensive, it's $98,000 for this particular jet ski, but it wasn't made for the everyday person at the moment. We are right. working on one that is much cheaper or less expensive. For the simple reason is that as we grow that technology, we're able to bring that down. But this particular jet ski has, you know, a place for a canopy. It has a, you know, for a place for your fishing poles. It's mm-hmm. a mini boat and mm-hmm. you know,
looks,
in itself.
It looks pretty big. I'm looking at the one online here again. The website is Dimora Motorcar, D-I-M-O-R-A. Motorcar is one word, demoramotorcar.com, and you can also see a picture now of the electric jet ski that he's talking about here.
Yep. The jet ski I'm very excited about. I think it makes a lot of sense for, you know, as far as an electric type of vehicle.
Maybe you'll have to change the name of the company to Dimora Transportation or Dimora Movement or Dimora something here to Motion or something here.
Well, we go under the Dimora Auto Group label, so which will cover, you know, all aspects of it. So mm-hmm. even with our V16 motor that we discussed with the Natalia, that motor was actually and being designed for the boat industry.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So the marine world has a whole different, you know, criteria to it, mm-hmm. which we are actually set up in Detroit to do.
That makes sense, because when I was a kid, we all lived on the lakes, and we all had boats, and a lot of them had just some sort of car engine dropped into them here.
Yeah.
I don't know how they retool it or redo it, but...
There's a lot to it, but, you know, when you have 1,200 horsepower aspirated, and then you can twin turbocharge or supercharge it up to 1,600 horsepower...
I love this talk. This is it.
You can have some fun.
There you go.
And that's what it's all about, right?
Well, I continue to wish you the best of luck. It doesn't sound like you need it. It sounds like you've got so many different things on your plate that all have just explosive opportunities written all over them here. How do people find out about any of these things again? Give us the website and tell us about, I mean, do you ever give tours out there? Do people, is this a skunk works and it's hidden to the public or?
Actually, you can go to our website and most of that stuff is on our website. Even the Natalia, it's the first time ever that a car has been able to be watched being built on the internet.
That's what you talked about. So yeah. You've actually, it isn't the skunk works. Imagine if you could see the B-1 bomber being designed in progress, folks, and watch it, little live webcams and stuff as they're working on some of these things. What a wild idea.
Yeah, well, you know, it helps young people understand. It helps just people understand it, even to old. And we have so many people that sign up on our newsletter to learn more about it and how they can get involved with it. But it's really fun. It's fantastic. As far as our facility is concerned, we don't even have signs on our building. You have to be invited into our building.
Okay.
So even though we're in Palm Springs, I can tell you that a lot of people say to me, I've driven by that place 1,000 times and didn't even know you were there. So We do give tours, but the tours are, you know, invited.
Right. Okay. Well, I hope you'll invite us to come out there. I have a second home out in the desert, and one of these days we'll have to come by and sneak into the Skunk Works and sign all the non-disclosures and take a look at what you're doing, because it sounds fascinating.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun, and I appreciate it.
All right. Well, we've been talking with Sir Alfred DeMora of DeMora Motor Car, the founder and CEO of not only... Is this the world's most expensive car? I know that's always maybe the changing target or something. But
it
right
is
now.
The world's most expensive production car out there. The Natalia is at the moment. And, of course, our Vici is, even though it's at $1 million for the paintings, we do start those cars at $175,000 to $225,000. So that is still in someone's range.
And are these just, I mean, what's a projected production run? Because these are all custom-built. These are like old-fashioned cars where they build them one at a time, really.
Yeah, we're doing 30 cars a month. We're scheduled to do 30 cars a month.
And are you going to go to high-end dealers? Are you going to do what Tesla does and try and sell these over the internet? What's the marketing strategy for bringing these to market?
You know, we have our dealer network out there. We're always inviting new dealers to come to us. So, yeah, it's either through the factory or the dealers. And, of course, our dealers are worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Is there one in Orange County that you have lined up yet? Or?
I have not.
There you go, folks. There's an opportunity. A lot of big high-end dealers here. We've had a number of them on different shows here, or dealer groups. And it seems like they do want to find, I know this drives you crazy, but niche products that they can add to their existing car lineups. That seems to be a trend that's continuing for years and years, although my father would be rolling over in his grave because he thought a Chrysler dealer should only sell Chryslers, and the company should never allow them to sell Hyundais or anything else here, but that's old school.
Well, I plan on bringing the car down here to Cars and Coffee, and I can guarantee you can put any car next to me, and the crowd will be next to us.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us when you're going to do that, because we want to come over and see one of these things here. You've whetted our appetites. All right. Thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening, as always, to OC Spotlight, where we find the most fascinating thought leaders right here in your backyard, doing the most amazing things.